Servants, weapons, and confidential companions. शास्त्र विचारनेक निपुणौ षड् धर्म संस्थापकौ लोकानां हितकारिणौ त्रिभुवने मान्यौ शरण्याकरौ राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजना आनन्देन मत्तालिकौ वन्दे रूप सनातन रघुयुगौ श्रीजीव गोपालकौ ट्रांसलेशन I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatt Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Narom Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nashta Prayeshva Padreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Shankara, Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamam Bhajami. Some of the highlights that we should really, listen very carefully. And there are a couple of verses that were so important, actually, why we are, the living entities, are under the grip of Krishna's external potency, and so on. Like the two verses that I really like very much are here. And also the analogies, that makes the point really very clear. So these two verses are very, very important, and the analogies. And I'm going to recite this verse so that, you can hear that, and we'll translate also, we'll read the translation also. Gano yada ark prabhavo, gano yada ark prabhavo vidhiryate. Chakshu swarupam ravim ikshate tada, chakshu swarupam ravim ikshate tada, yada hi ahankar upadhir atmano, jignasaya nashyati tarhi anusmaret. Now let's understand. Ghana, actually ghana means, in Sanskrit, means dark, dense, actually. Here it is the dense dark cloud, and yada arka prabhava, in fact, these clouds is the production, is the formation by the sun's heat energy. The sun itself is the origin of that, so just when these clouds are dispersed by the wind, what we realize, chakshuhu, these are the eyes, chakshu means the eyes, eyes can begin to see, because that is, even being able to see, that is also because of this sun. Without sunlight, cannot see, So chakshu swarupam, its own character, being able to see, that is revealed. That happens when this cloud, which is the which is actually formed by the sun's heat energy. So when that is dispersed, tada, at that time, we are able to see, the eyes able to see own character, the swarupa lakshana, So in the same way, yada hi ahankara, yada hi means suddenly, at that time, this ahankara, the aham tattva, the I consciousness, I, me and mine. So that kind of consciousness, this ahankara, that is based on this bodily conception. So that is not the real one. There's a real I consciousness also, and that is Brahmasmi, Brahmasmi aham, that I am this soul. So that is a real consciousness. So that is actually is covered. Upadhir atmano. Upadhi means that is the delimitation because of Maya, So upadhir atmano, Maya, this, we have this physical body. So that is covered. So just as sun's own production of these clouds gets dispersed, same way this our upadhi, that causes that because of upadhi, just as because of cloud, we cannot see, we cannot visualize the sun, same way we could, our vision is covered. So here also that our realization of Parma, that is covered. So he ahankara upadhir atmano, because of this upadhi, and that could be revealed back when jignasaya nashati, jignasaya nashati tahi anusmaret. So jignasaya, jignasa means, in Sanskrit means intense inquiry. It's not passive inquiry, intense. And the next verse actually clarifies how intense it should be. Nashyati, that means that destroys this ahankara. And at that time, what happens? Tarhi anusmaret. At that time, we get civilization, you know. So that is, let them be revert back to our original Swarupa, just like eyes get to his own Swarupa Lakshana, being able to see and being able to visualize the sun. Same way, when this Ahankar is removed by intense inquiry unto Paramatma, Paramatma realization, then we begin to, so that Ahankar is destroyed, and the true Lakshana, Swarup Lakshana, that is the I consciousness, the original, the real I consciousness, that desirable based on spiritual platform, that becomes, that is returning back again, and that we remember that who we are, you know, and who is Paramatma, and what is our relationship with Paramatma, that we realize that. So in the second verse, now these words are spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj in his final instructions, you know, after having described in Shrimad Bhagavatam. So now he's giving highlights actually. So the next verse he is defining further, what is this jignasaya? What is this intense inquiry unto Paramatma, you know, which help us to regain our real I consciousness, real Aham Tattva, that we are spirit soul and we are meant to serve Paramatma, you know. So that is this verse. Yad evam etena, yad evam etena viveka etena. So that means this one. Yad evam simply etena this. This means what? Viveka hetina. Now vivek, actually here it means our sense of discrimination, you know, what is right versus wrong and so on like that. Here being able to discriminate I consciousness, real versus the ahankara, you know. So that's what it says. So vivek hetina, so this is the instrument of vivek hetina, you know. And then second part of that, first maya maya ahankara ahankaran atma bandhanam, maya maya. So this is because of this this Paramatma's external potency, which is the cause, which is what really gives this ahankara. So ahankara is due to this this is the work of maya, and that is the cause, atmabandhanam, that is itself the ahankara, the, we get this bodily conception of this I, me and mine, that is the cause of our atmabandhanam, this bondage into this material existence. So how that could be cut by the axe, by the sword of viveka hetina, chitva. Chitva means cut. Chitva achyutam atmana atma anubhavo avatishtati. Avatishtate. So that is chitva, and that is cut by achyutam. Achyutam now actually used, it is generally used for Lord Krishna. But here is Krishna's expansion, the super soul, the infallible super soul, anubhava, so realization of that. Avatishtate. Then we are actually return back to that kind of realization. And that's why it is said, Tam Ahur, that is said by the learned sages, Tam Ahur Atyantikam Atyantim Anga Samplavam. So that's how they say, sages have said, that is itself is the ultimate liberation of the living entity. Remember we discussed about the four kinds of pralaya, dissolutions. So this is the final dissolution. So living entity dissolves his material existence and returns back to spiritual world. So he doesn't have to come back again the next cycle of material creation. So samplam, that is the liberation. So you can see very clearly these two verses are very important, and the way this analogy of this cloud is being used, that you know, and how this intense inquiry, that is the Paramatma realization that we need to get, and then we become completely, we become become fully liberated from material existence. By what again? So the intense inquiry to that achyuta atma anubhava, achyutam anubhava avatishtato. That's how we return. So by realization of the super soul, paramatma, further we discuss about these this 8 questions of Vidur Mahatma to Maitreya Muni, series of questions. So he begins with how Nirguna Paramatma, Paramatma which is devoid of any material qualities, Nirguna Paramatma acts with Maya, which is Krishna's external potency, and that is full of this material modes of nature. So, and that is how Paramatma actually sustains this creation, by the mode of material mode of goodness. So, even though Paramatma himself is totally devoid of material qualities, and yet it seems like that he is, using this goodness. That's how he sustains material universe. How is that possible? And second thing, another question Vidur Mahatma is asking is about the living entity. Is being the superior energy, how superior energy jivas are being controlled by Maya, which is the inferior energy of Paramatma. So that is kind of very, very perplexing to Parikshit Maharaj. That's why he's asking this question to Sukadeva Goswami, So that actually being narrated by Maitreya Muni to Vidur Mahatma, this question, Same question Parikshit Maharaj had asked, what Vidur Mahatma is now asking to Maitreya Muni. A more important question, that both Paramatma, Super Soul, and the individual soul both reside side by side in the heart of the living entity, and yet Paramatma is unaffected by Maya, where it is only the living entity, the Jiva, is actually affected, controlled by the three modes of material nature, by Maya, So how is it that possible, So it seems like that Maya is the cause of the living entity's material existence. But that again is also not a complete truth. It is not Maya, because the real I consciousness, the Aham Tattva, which is desirable, the spiritual identity of ourself, that is never lost. Desha Kala, any time of places, time and circumstance, that is always there with the living entity. Even in our deep sleep, when the soul is disconnected with outer world, disconnected with all the senses and mind and everything, and yet when we sleep deep sleep, we sleep nicely. So when we do wake up, that time we can still remember that we slept well, even though we were totally out, disconnected with outer world. So how is it possible? So that is because of this true I consciousness. That means the soul is being able to witness this role is just upadrashta, just like the super soul. In a limited sense, soul can see, by himself, So that is always there. So the upadhi of this ahankara comes because of this true, real aham tattva. That is the adhara, that is the foundation on which this ahankara sits actually. So question was that, is then Maya is the real cause of the living entity's material existence? So, but then it says, no, that's not true actually. Because then it would seem that at some point in time, living entity came into the grip of Maya. But no, because Jiva's material existence is from time immemorial. It's always there. You cannot trace back when that happened in point of time, So that is not there. In fact, Maitreya Muni describes that the because when a head is chopped, you cannot see anything anyway, you know. So that's not, so this only in a dream state that happened. So the real material exists, material existence is also not real. It's the illusory actually, you know. It's just like a dream state. So that's a very important point that, you know, I just wanted to touch back. And now we are going forward. And then how? What is the explanation? How Maya is unable to control Paramatma, and how Paramatma allows, even though Jiva and Paramatma both super soul both together in the heart, even in presence of the super soul, Maya is able to control the Jiva. How, you know? First, how is Paramatma not being controlled? Not being able to control by Maya, because Maya is considered like a shadow, or you know, parchai, you know. So shadow cannot touch the original, you know, person. Same way Maya cannot, and Paramatma owns Maya. So Paramatma is the one who controls Maya. So Maya cannot control Paramatma, and Maya is like a shadow, you know. However, shadow can overcast others actually. Same way Maya can control the Jivas, and Jiva is because Jiva is a marginal potency of Krishna, you know. So when Jiva is under the, comes in the control of the, when Jiva is turned away from Paramatma realization, then Maya takes control. As long as Jiva is under Paramatma realization, then what we saw in the other verse, then Maya cannot touch, you know. So that is also an important point that we must remember. So with that, let's move on to the today's verse. Today's, so that is the now beginning, that is the verse, text 23rd to 104. So here it is, Bhagavan's impartiality, that's the main that we are going to be discussing today, and his intention in regard to the creative act. So far, Jiva Goswami has very clearly established that Bhagavan is the cause. Now Bhagavan means here, Bhagavan's expansion, Paramatma, is the cause, Paramatma's time potency actually, behind the creation and sustenance and dissolution of this cosmic universe. And yet, he is neither influenced by the modes nor undergo any modification. Yes, and the last week we also discussed that how Maya, being a superior energy, being able to control the Jiva, being the superior energy, you know, that because Maya's inconceivable potency, just like Paramatma also has inconceivable potency, Maya inconceivable potency, it's called transrational power, you know, and that's why Maya is able to control Jiva. So all this thing is very nicely expressed by Jiva Goswami. So now what he's doing, and this very nice, wonderful, important thing to remember. Like I'm trying to follow like that. In fact, just like in Bhagavad Sandarbha, remember there are Bhagavad Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami described about the four principles that one must be very careful when one writes a book like that. So that's exactly what I'm following. Now he's saying that this, if you have a hypothesis, you have a theory, a principle, siddhanta, that you want to establish, the more you actually, so it's like an analogy is given here, that when you drive a post, you know, you hammer it again and again, so very firmly anchored on the ground actually, you know, so that, that analogy, Jiva Goswami is showing us. That in fact that Sanskrit that method is called Sthuna Nikanan Nyaya, that you see in this PowerPoint, right? sthula nikanan nyaya. So more and more you drive the post deeper, it becomes much more stabilized. You know, the same way a theory you have, a principle you have that you want to establish, then you preconceive all the possible objections, arguments and counter arguments that you by others might ask, critics. You answer and refute successfully, so then the principle, the hypothesis is firmly established. And that's what exactly I mean, except the, because I too have a hypothesis in the book that I'm writing. So you preconceive everything, what possible your critics might come up objecting and trying to put holes in your theory. So you refute right one by one by yourself before it even comes, you know. So that is exactly what Jiva Goswami is doing that. So he's raising a doubt here, a possible objection by the critic like Viparthavada philosophy, the opponent philosophy, you know. If the Lord is the agent of such actions as protecting the demigods, because it's very well known actually, you know. By the Lord's pastimes, when he descends into material world in his different incarnations, he always fights with the demons and kills them, and at the same he protects his devotees. So and yet a Paramatma is supposed to be a neutral, you know, impartial. So how is that? That question was very perplexing. Parikshit Maharaj, that's why he's asking the spiritual master Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami is replying that, you know. So he's saying that this killing of the demons and favoring his devotees, if that is so, then how can justifiably the Lord Paramatma can claim that he is impartial? Clearly he is not impartial. He is favoring towards his devotees, you know. So then he must be influenced by material modes, you know. Otherwise, how could he behave in this particular manner? That's the question, you know. So he would be biased against the wicked, the demons, and he would be favoring his devotees, saintly personalities, you know. So if on the other hand, let's say, so that is what Krishna is doing whenever he reaches the material world. So either directly or through his expansions, incarnations, in either case, the critics would point out that the principle that he acts by Swarupa Lakshana, by his internal potency, that cannot be there, because obviously he is going to be affected by these modes of material nature. So if on the other end these actions are done either by his expansions or directly by him, then it would contradict the principle that his actions and attributes are part of his inherent nature. Swarupa Lakshana, in fact, that is what Brahmaji also says, that that what Krishna does is by his Swarupa Lakshana. So that's what is here. In fact, Kunti Devi also says in her prayers, in the first canto, 8th chapter actually, you know, text 20, that you have appeared to grant bhakti yoga. Excuse me. That Sukhuti Devi is praying to Krishna that you have appeared to grant bhakti yoga to the pure-hearted Paramahamsa sages, with the topmost Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa means the topmost sage devotees. So how can we women see you? And that's her point. But she's clearly pointing out that bhakti yoga. Now bhakti comes from Krishna's internal potency, his Swarupa Lakshana. Now we also know Krishna's internal potency are of three kinds. This Sandini potency, Samavit potency, and Ladini potency. The Ladini, Ladini potency, the bliss, that is the cause for bhakti. Bhakti comes from that, you know. So that means he acts through his internal potency. The same way Brahmaji also says this very clearly. Prapancham nishprapancha, prapancham, now prapancha means actually material existence. Nishprapancha is opposite of that. Opposite of material existence is spiritual existence, you know. So niprapancham nishprapancha api vidambhyasi bhutale prapanna janata ananda sandoham pratitum prabho. So what is verse is Brahmaji is praying that, Brahmaji is saying that to expand the totality of bliss of those who are surrendered unto you, prapanna janata sandoham, ananda sandoham. So all the devotees, personalities, for their bliss that you appear, and this devotees are totally surrendered unto you unconditionally. So for their own bliss, you know, to give them, to really give them his association, that you descend in this earth, you know, and then when you come, you seem to imitate the ways of this material existence, you know, even though you have nothing to do with that material existence. And yet, it's just like many of the incarnation, the Lord behaves like he is an ordinary human being. Just like Lord Ramachandra, remember? Lord Ramachandra, when Mata Sita Devi was kidnapped by the demon Ravana, and Lord Ramachandra, along with Lakshmana, they were searching for Sita Mata in all over the world, all over the jungle, you know, the forest and everything, the forest, the trees and, you know, all places, you know. So he kept on crying and shouting, you know, crying like anything, and asking the even trees that, have you ever seen my Sita, you know, like that. So it looks like that he, like an ordinary person, he was lamenting by the loss of his wife and so on like that. And even though he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in fact, Maya herself, Mata Parvati, was actually become kind of perplexed, being came into the illusion. That's amazing. Maya herself became perplexed. And saying to Lord Shiva, that how could he be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Looks like he is lamenting like an ordinary person. So Lord Shiva is actually telling Mother Parvati that don't be under that illusion, you know, that he is the Supreme Brahman, you know. So the point is here that in many of these incarnations, while helping, while giving his personal association, giving bliss to his devotees, he appeared to act this, the way like an ordinary person does in the material world, you know. So that's the point Brahmaji is pointing out. So to expand the totality of bliss of those who are surrendered unto you, O Lord, you imitate the ways of the material world on this earth, you know. Though, now this is an important part here, though you are beyond all connection with the world, Pratitam Prabho. So, in fact, Brahmaji further says that here. So that I may remain, so now he is actually asking, this is one of the verse, right, you know, after this Chatushtoki Bhagatam verses comes actually. In fact, this is a verse that's spoken, is even discussed in the third canto actually, 9th chapter, text 23. And Maitreya Muni is actually describing to Vidur Mahatma actually this story. So here Brahmaji is speaking. So that I may remain untainted by my work. So he is making sure that if you are asking me to do this secondary creation, make sure that I don't become too proud, you know, false pride develop in me, you know. So that's why he's praying to the Lord. So that I may remain untainted by my work, even as I create this universe, which is a display of his creative power, you know, may the Lord, who fulfills the wishes of those who take refuge in him, just like he said, I am taking your refuge, my Lord, you know, engage my mind in the divine play he performs, manifesting many transcendental virtues when he descends. And that is when this Sanskrit, this verse comes, Grihita Guna Avatara, you know, Bhagavan's incarnation in the quality of mercy, along with his intrinsic potency, Rama, you know. So that is an internal potency. Rama is actually the expansion of Srimati Radha Devi, you know, Radha Rani. So the point here, Ramaji is making, that all these activities that he's doing in different incarnation are actually directly by his internal potency, Swarupa Lakshana, especially this Ladini Shakti. You know. That's the bhakti that he himself gives to his devotees, is because of his Ladini potency. So Parikshit Maharaj is asking a question that if he is known to be partial to his devotees, comes to protect him, protects his devotees, and in that process he kills the demons, so animosity is there. So how can he claim that he acts out of his internal potency? You know? That's the point here. So Jiva Goswami is making that point very clearly here, that it's not that bhakti actually comes from internal potency, and that is what it is really there, and it is not due to. So here's what the devotees themselves are self-satisfied, just like the Lord is Atmarama, so devotees are also satisfied. So that could be another objection Jiva Goswami is pointing out. Since Bhagavan gives bliss to his devotees and they to him, he or they must not be self-satisfied. You know, how is it possible that, you know, and moreover, he gives pleasure to his devotees while neglecting others. Therefore, he must be biased because he acts only for the devotees' benefit, devotee benefit, and not for the others, like demons and so on like that. So there Jiva Goswami is responding and is refuting that objection, that his devotees also, devotees have, just like the Lord, devotees are also transcendental bodies they have, you know. Their bodies are spiritualized and are endowed with Vishuddha Sattva, pure mode of goodness, you know. And his eternal associates directly descend along with him from Vaikuntha, you know. So that point is very successfully refuted by Jiva Goswami, that it is simply not possible, that objection that they are raising actually, you know. He exists both in the devotee. The point is made very clear in this text 93, sub text 4, 93.4, you know. Bhakti is the very essence of Ladini potency of the Lord, as I just said a few minutes ago, which is Swarupa Shakti, internal potency. Internal potency are three kinds, Sandini, Samavit. The Samavit is the knowledge giving potency. And the Ladini, that's the blissful, and that is why he gives the bliss to his devotees. Bhakti also comes from Ladini potency. So that is the very essence of bhakti. And just as devotees are unconditionally surrendered to him, even Lord also is bound. In fact, he willingly lets himself control by his devotees, actually, you know. So he is not ungrateful, nor he lacks self-satisfaction. He declares that he is dependent on his devotees because they have captured his heart by their love. In fact, that he says very clearly. Let me read a translation of a few of the verses. This is what happened. If you remember Ambarish Maharaj, this story about that. Ambarish Maharaj was a great, great devotee of the Lord. And Ambarish Maharaj unknowingly committed some offense, you know. It was not his fault at all, actually, you know. He was fasting and at that time Durvasa Muni along with his 10,000 disciples came to visit him. So of course Ambarish Maharaj said that why don't you take bath in the river and come back, and in the meantime I have arrangement made for the lunch, you know. So Dhruvasmani went there. Here, Ambarish Maharaj was observing Ekadasi. So the time was approaching very fast to break that Ekadasi, you know. And he consulted Brahmanas. So how should I do that? Because he is not supposed to eat before his guests are fed, Dhruvasamuni and his disciple. And the time for that is passing very quickly. So Brahmana said that this should be a medium way. Then why don't you just take just water actually, you know? Now when Dhruvasamuni came and he realized, so even just taking water, he thought that that was also, he should not have taken even water before he and his disciples become fed and all this thing, you know, prasadam. So he become very angry as Dhruvasamuni's character. He becomes angry very quickly, and he produced a great demon to kill Ambarish Maharaj, you know. So Ambarish Maharaj, you know, just praying the Lord, he was chanting the holy name actually at that time, you know. So Lord himself, in order to protect Ambarish Maharaj against Dhruvasamuni, sent his Sudarshan Chakra, you know. And so, as soon as Sudarshan Chakra came, and Sudarshan Chakra completely destroyed the demon created by Dhruvasamuni, and then started chasing Dhruvasa. Dhruvasa kept running here and there throughout material existence, material universe. And then ultimately then he was taking shelter of Brahma and Lord Shiva. Both refused. They can help and all, you know. He must go to Vaikuntha. There only Lord himself can save you, you know. The Sudarshan Chakra belongs to him. So he comes to Vaikuntha actually. In fact, that it's explains not the Vaikuntha in the spiritual world, but Vaikuntha in this material universe. So he comes to this milk ocean, that point, you know, where Kshirodaksha Vishnu resides actually. So there, Lord actually tells him that he is unable to help him, even himself, because he is bound completely by his devotee. Only if Ambarish Maharaj, if he pardons you, then my Sudarshan Chakra can be withdrawn. You know? So that is what, let me read this. It's very interesting here. Excuse me, just give me a minute.
Even this Dhruvasamuni said, no, you
just go back to Amrit himself, and if he pardons, then my Sudarshan Chakra can be withdrawn. So point here, Jiva Goswami is citing these verses, is that Lord also, just as devotees are totally surrendered to him, the Lord himself also totally let himself control by the devotees. So this is a mutual reciprocal relationship in bhakti, both Bhagavan and his devotees. And that's a very interesting point to know that, So bhakti is very essence of Ladini Pot. So he declares that he is known as devotees because they have captured his heart by their love. So now Jiva Goswami is going to, defend all these things. And he defends Bhagavan's, because now it's clearly, he acknowledged, Jiva Goswami clearly acknowledged, even the Lord is impartial. In fact, Lord himself says, Samaha Sarva Bhuteshu, I am equal to everyone and so on like that. Yet, he is known to be favorably inclined to his devotees. So he defends Lord's partiality towards his devotees by first examining the psychology of compassion. So here now, this is a very important point that I made this slide, just to summarize. Now, we have to understand what is exactly compassion, Now, compassion is actually the transformation of heart, the mind, the chitta, when we see somebody suffering, what is heart itself melts right there, in fact, Narasimha Mehta's the bhajan is very, very, very nice, Vaishnava jana to tene re kahiye je peed paraye jaane. Somebody else is suffering pain, a devotee actually experiences that, So compassion comes from the transformation of heart, transformation of the heart and the mind that arises when heart directly contracts the misery of another person. When we see somebody suffering, our heart, if you are a devotee, we just simply cannot bear to see that, So that immediately the compassion develops within your heart. So, and that is impaired. When impaired by such compassion, the person goes to act for another's welfare. Immediately, he starts praying, and then feels empathy in relation to the other's misery. He feels really, actually, the devotee feels the pain of others. That's the point here. That's called empathy. So this empathy implies, forces one to remove the misery. Immediately, he would try level best whatever he can do. If he cannot do it, he will pray on behalf of the suffering person to the Lord. The devotee will do that, of this those with whom he empathizes. So that is what compassion really means. But here's the difficulty with the Lord. How the Lord's compassion comes now. This is the way actually says, now this is where Jiva Goswami actually quotes another verse. There's a difference how the Lord's compassion comes, Ordinarily, and this is the verse actually. So here the point Jiva Goswami is making, that Bhagavan has no experience of material misery. Because many times actually we say, when we are even devotees, and that includes me also, sometimes extreme suffering comes and we are praying, we are serving the Lord without any ulterior motives, and yet devotees undergo these sufferings. So that sometimes, devotees sometimes, particularly immature devotees like me, it says that how Lord, you are going to actually understand that, because you never suffer, without you suffering, how you are going to actually know what is suffering means, material suffering, So this is that verse that says that, Yatha kantaka vittango jantur na chati tam vyadham vyadham jeeva சாமியம் கத்தோ லிங்கே நதா வித் கண்டகம். The point is very simple that unless like somebody who is pierced by a thorn and he experienced the pain of piercing of the thorn in the leg, you know, in the foot, you know, he is not going to be able to understand somebody else's pain of this piercing thorn. One whose foot has been pricked by a thorn would not desire others to suffer such agony. Having understood the sameness of all the living beings in regard to the experience of pain, through external science, but not a person who has never been so pricked. So, point is very simple here. Unless someone himself actually experienced, went through that kind of material suffering, how is he going to exactly know? You cannot say that I know your pain, I feel your pain. How can you say? Because you yourself never underwent any such pains or sufferings. The Lord is not that he never suffered any material pain, you know. So that point is Jiva Goswami is going to explain that, defend that, you know. So that is the he already understood. His critic might point out that. So it is the feeling of empathy that impels one to remove the misery of the person with whom one empathizes. So for Bhagavan, however, such empathy is impossible. Therefore, he is not impelled by compassion. Now that's a very important point to understand. This is a kind of mystery actually. You know? Bhagavan simply cannot have that kind of thing because he never undergoes suffering. Now, material sufferings we all know is because of a karmic reaction, right? Bhagavan never has that kind of thing, you know. So that's why Bhagavan never undergoes material suffering or even pleasure, you know, because that is all due to karmas. So he is not impelled by compassion, because to be compassionate, the pain of another has to touch one's own heart, and Lord doesn't go through that. So for Bhagavan, who is eternally blissful and free from sin, there is no experience of material misery. Just as there is a complete absence of darkness in the light. How do we define light? The absence of darkness. You know, light does not have any kind of experience of darkness. You know? And the same with this nocturnal, these animals, just like owl. Who has no capacity to see the sun. He never, he sleeps during the daytime. Excuse me. So now Jiva Goswami is now very, very important. Please listen very carefully. He is going to answer that particular objection by his critics. So Jiva Goswami is explaining to this objection, replies that the pain and pleasure of a devotee, first of all, are not on material platform. Rather, they are both manifestation of bhakti, the intrinsic potency of the Lord. So since the devotee's suffering is not exactly on the same platform as non-devotee's suffering, that is first we must understand that, you know. Therefore, he experienced only his intrinsic potency while realizing the pain and pleasure of his devotee. So the point here, how does Lord feels the pain of others? Because he himself does not ever go through material suffering. So how does he exactly know what material suffering actually means? You know, how painful it could be. So that is through bhakti actually. So the devotees who are undergoing material suffering, they actually pray to the Lord through bhakti actually. They pray to the Lord, intensely they begin chanting the holy name actually. They intensely hear all about the Lord and they pray, you know, even in the extreme suffering. And that is what really attracts the mercy, compassion of the Lord. Lord does not respond to somebody who is going through this material misery. The misery itself does not affect the Lord. The Lord, what is Lord? she element, she elephants, and that time a crocodile, a very powerful crocodile in the water, grabbed this Gajendra's foot and trying to pull him through with this deep water actually. Now Gajendra was very, very powerful elephant actually, very powerful, but his power is on the land. His power in the water was nothing compared to the crocodile's power in the water actually. So he was helpless and he was about to be killed actually by the crocodile, you know. So at that point, Gajendra began very intensely praying to the Lord actually. Now of course, one would understand, one would begin to wonder, how could an elephant, an animal, could pray to the Lord actually. But it turns out in that pastime, I have no time to go through all that pastime described very fully. But a point to remember that Gajendra himself was a great devotee in his past life. So the point here, just like Chitraketu, when he comes the next life as a demon, but he was a great devotee of the Lord as Chitraketu. So a devotee's bhakti, they never forget actually, you know. So even when because the karma or whatever, if they have to come to the next life again, the previous bhakti, whatever little bhakti that he has done, it is never goes in vain, and he remembers his previous life also actually now. So here that's because of that, Gajendra's previous being a devotee, previous lifetime, he was able to remember the Lord always, and in bhakti was continued. So he prays to the Lord, and Lord himself actually appears, and immediately he throws his Sudarshan Chakra and cuts off this crocodile actually, the head of the crocodile, and releases Gajendra. So the question might be here, that wasn't the Lord able to empathize with the pain of Gajendra? That's how the Lord immediately responded. So Jiva Goswami is responding again, no, it was not because of the pain of Gajendra that Lord came, but his prayers, intense prayers, that really impels the Lord's compassion actually, no? So it's a fact, Gajendra was in material pain. Bhagwan did not rescue him out of empathy for his pain, but by his surrendering into the form, you know. So what was his prayers? Finally he's praying that, oh my Lord, you are my only shelter. If you are not going to do that, I'm going to be perished, you know. Just like Draupadi. Draupadi was being disrobed. First she actually was trying to use by her own power. She was holding the last end of the sari with her tooth, with her thumb into the tooth. There was no help. She actually first sought help from her powerful five husbands, Pandavas, but they were helpless. Then she prayed to Bhishmadeva, Bhishma Pitama. He was helpless. Dhritarashtra, they were all helpless. Finally, with one hand holding the sari, another hand she calls Krishna. You know, even then Krishna did not appear. When both arms went up the air, in total surrender, then Krishna came. You know, so that bhakti, intense bhakti, intense calling for the Lord. That is what really attracts the Lord's mercy. The Lord comes actually, not by intense suffering. So that's the important point that we must learn here, you know. And that is what Jiva Goswami is pointing out, that it is a fact Gajendra was in material pain, but Bhagwan did not rescue him out of empathy for his pain, but by his surrender in the form, you are my only shelter. When Gajendra said that, just like Draupadi said, you know, that my honor is now in your hand, my Lord, you know. So thus it is the bhakti alone that impelled the Lord to rescue him. So conclusion here, the compassion of the Lord for his devotees manifest as a result of their bhakti and not because of the material suffering of that person are so blessed. Very important point to remember here, you know, how to attract Lord's mercy. You know, only bhakti can save, you know, just that complete surrender. No matter what kind of suffering we might be going through, how intense, but Lord instinctively perish now. No. So, they don't even care to be perished also. That then also for the cause of the Lord, they are willing to go to the hellish planet even there. They are willing to die. But they will pray, "My Lord, you are my only shelter." So that key word has to be there in your prayers. "Oh my Lord, you are my only shelter. Whether you want me to sink, I will sink. Whether you want me to swim, I will swim." Yeah, that's what the point here, sink or swim. So that is how the compassion works, you know. Lord's compassion. So his devotees do experience material misery, and thus it is possible for them to empathize with the suffering of others. So how does happen? That's what the Lord's compassion works that way. But the ordinary devotees, those who are very, very advanced devotees, they do feel the pain of others. And actually what they do, they themselves will pray to the Lord on behalf of that suffering human being or suffering human animals, you know. And they will pray to the Lord that, "Please Lord, come and save this person." And then Lord will come that, you know. And that's another point, a very important point. So just to sum up, Bhagavan is complete in himself, his Atmarama. He acts only for the delight of his devotees. While this is to, so he actually descends, he comes in the material world, is only for the pleasure of his devotees. But as a part of that, as a side thing, he sustains, maintains this universe, you know. That also for the benefit of his devotees, you know, to give him repeated opportunity, his devotee, so he can attain perfection, his bhakti, and then he becomes qualified to go back to spiritual world. That is the reason why he has this material universe, and he repeatedly create and dissolve and recreate like that. He does that. So now, what about the demons killed by the Lord? So even the demons, out of great envy, they develop animosity against the Lord. But the Lord has no enemies. Even to his the envious demons, he is so merciful that they become liberated from material existence. That was one of the reasons why Parikshit was asking that, you know, if the demons also get the same kind of liberation as devotees, then what is the difference between devotee and demon, you know? But the kind of liberation demons get is not the same as a devotee gets. Devotees get personally to get to serve the Lord in spiritual world, whereas demons, they get liberation, what called Sayujya Mukti, merging within the Brahma Jyoti, within the impersonal impersonal effulgence, the Lord, which is called Brahma Jyoti, they merge into that actually, you know. So it may appear that the Lord is punishing the wicked when he chastises them, but his actions end up in the purification of the devil themselves. But then a demon killed by Krishna always become liberated. So Krishna bringing back, in fact there is an example that he cites in Shiva Goswami about the Sandipani Muni actually. When Sandipani Muni was the guru, teacher of Krishna in Dwarka, you know. And after completion of the studies, it is a tradition, a disciple offers Kudakshina to his guru, you know, as a token of his appreciation. So Krishna also offers that, and Sandipani Muni, knowing that Krishna is none other than Supreme Personality Godhead, then he makes this request, that because they had one son, only son, and that son was killed actually long time back. So he said that if you really want to give Guru Dakshina, please bring my son back to life actually. Now that the son had already died actually, you know, and so Krishna goes there to the world of Yamaraj actually, the planet of Yamaraj, and gets back. So that is the story he cites actually as an example of here, you know, showing that. Because his son was actually killed by a demon called Sankhasuna. And he kills that fight with Sankhasuna.
So boy had been killed by a demon named Sankasura. Bhagavan is altogether free from bias. He grants Brahma Sayuja Mukti or heaven to those who envy his devotees. So in reality, Bhagavan has no enemies. He is called Ajata Shatru, for whom no enemies are actually taken birth. No? But he could be enemy to the demons. So this is the verse Jugaswami quotes for that. Nahi asya artha suraganai saksha nihi shreyasa atmana naiva eva surebhyo vidvesho no vidvega agunasya hi. Vidvesha means the envy, and udvega means the fear. You know? So he who directly embodies the supreme welfare certainly has no purpose to fulfill from the host of demigods, so many demigods. Nor does he who devoid of material modes feel any animosity towards the demons, nor is in any way fearful of them. So that is the character of the Supreme Lord actually. You know? This is in response to Parikshit's perplexity, because Parikshit Maharaj was asking about this question to Sukadeva Goswami. You know, and so Sukadeva Goswami explains to me all these things. So Lord Vishnu favored Indra, killed son Diti, Indra, and then so the demon Balraj, Bali Maharaj, you know. In that, he actually favored the king of the demigods Indra, and killed the sons of Diti, not in Bali Maharaj, actually, this was. The Hiranyakashipu's pastime there. It's being referred here actually. He had these two sons, first Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and both were great powerful demons. Actually, they were the devotees Jaya and Vijaya. In the end, actually, that as an example, Jiva Goswami cites how to make this point home clearly. You know? So how could the Lord act in seemingly biased manner? So question is really, is Bhagavan biased? So I'll read the translation of this verse. O greatly fortunate one, a very grave doubt has arisen in my mind. So this is what Parikshit Maharaj is asking, you know, regarding the qualities of Bhagavan Narayana, which you alone are capable of resolving. Of course, Goswami was very pleased by asking that question by the Parikshit Maharaj. Said, O Emperor, you have raised an excellent question. Exploits of Bhagavan Hari are wonderful. They also include the glories of the great devotees, which increases one's devotion to Bhagavan. So he is thanking Parikshit Maharaj that this gives me an opportunity to discuss Lord's pastime with his devotees. And that hearing of that itself is of great benefit to his devotees. Reason for this is that we can relate to the lives of devotees more easily than that of Bhagavan. So in fact, hearing about Lord's pastime with his devotees is much more beneficial than hearing about Lord's own pastimes. So sages glorify Bhagavan and his devotees. Bhagavans are supremely pious, and so are sung by great sages like Narada. First, going to the sage Vyasadeva, I shall narrate a tale of Lord Hari. So Bhagavan behaves as if, so in many ways actually when he helps his devotees, it seems like that Lord is actually behaving as an ordinary conditioned soul. Nirguna api ajo means unborn, avyakta means unmanifest. Bhagavan prakrutihe para, he is beyond material nature. And yet, svamaya gunam avishya, as if he is entering the modes, you know. Bhadya badhakatam kataha. So sometimes he enters as within the person who is suffering or the one who causes this suffering. In both cases, Lord's partial potent nonsense. And the devotees who are actually serving the Lord, they happen to be suffering all the time. You know. So here is the case, the point that's being, now we learn that it is depending upon a particular mode that at that time is acting in the universe. So it's a collective mode. You know. And that is how it happens. Sometimes demons win the wars. Sometimes demons wins. The demoniac people win. Sometimes the devotees win, and so on, like that, depending on the particular mode, actually. You know. And that also, the win, whosoever wins or suffer, is there also the Lord Himself, His own potency is invested in them. And that is, so it's not the demons who become powerful by themselves, but it's because Lord's own potency being invested in them, that allows them to win, you know. So I think this is, I was thinking about when I was preparing for this, you know. Now you all must have heard about, must know about it. Those who are following politics, that in America, we have a new president. He's barely less than 2 months or something. You know, this president, I don't even want to name this person. Sometimes you wonder how a person like him could become the most powerful person in the world, actually. You know, this is President Trump we are talking about. In fact, one of the person who actually asked a question to Satyanarayan Prabhu, who is the author of this book, you know, that we study, he actually asked precisely the same question: how is this kind of person who has done all kind of nonsense all his life become most powerful person in the world? How could he be like that? So he has that, you know, Satyanarayan Prabhu. That's very, very nice actually. In fact, this in 8th canto, when Bali Maharaj wins the heavenly kingdom and forces demigods to take shelter elsewhere, throws them out of their homes, you know, that this point is actually being discussed there, you know, that sometimes Lord allows demons to win because the mode of passion, ignorance are prominent, and it's Lord's own potency is that. So then we must understand here that a person like this President Trump, you know, came to power, and right now it's a great controversy is going on that actually whether or not he actually came to power by fair means or not, we don't know. You know, that's being investigated now actually by the Russian influence and so on. I don't want to get into the politics because devotees have nothing to do with the politics. But the point we are discussing that in relevance, in context, what we are talking about, and why some demoniac kind of personalities win and get power, and those who are really deserving, they did not get to win. Like here, Hillary Clinton, who was truly deserving, actually I voted for her. So, point he has mentioned here that out of love for his devotees, he descends in the material world and behaves as if he is under the control of Maya. He remains manifest with his six divine opulence all the time. So, the point here is made that actually, Vishuddha Sattva is different from material Sattva. So his devotees are always in Vishuddha Sattva, pure mode of goodness. You know. So, material Sattva is part of material nature and subject to modification. Whereas Vishuddha Sattva, pure mode of goodness, immutable and intrinsic potency of Bhagavan. Bhagavan endows portions of Vishuddha Sattva into the demigods and others in proportion to their needs of his pastimes. So this is where that point is being discussed here. Sukha's response, it's time itself. The question was that Parishadwara actually asked us a question: how is it possible that demons were able to defeat Lord's devotees, demigods, and they become so powerful, you know? So that's the point here Sudeva Goswami is explaining. That sometimes the time, you know, itself corresponds to the period of prominence of various modes that conform to Bhagavan. But modes of time so acts accordance with the will, his will alone, the invisible presence of Bhagavan. If Bhagavan's potency is still present, is present in the demigods, in the demons, as just we heard about it, then why is it so not perceived directly? Analogy is given here. If you have a lens, and you place the sun is there, and if you have this particular lens, consider the sun's ray at its focal point, and there you place a piece of paper, paper will burn. The heat's energy, sun's energy, heat energy is focused right at that particular point, you know. So similarly, the demigods are able to assist the Lord or the demons to oppose him only by the infusion of his own power, the Lord's power actually. So Lord's power becomes focused at that particular point, you know, point in time. So without it, they have no such capacity. So even demons, their power also comes from the Supreme Lord. So in reality, it is a portion of his own in power transmitted into them that accomplishes the act of assistance or opposition. Bhagavan, to whom the qualitative movements of time conform. So you see that time also actually cooperates with Bhagavan. And time is a potency, is Lord's potency, and it is actually acting the Maya's according to the words, you know. So that is the one. So sometimes time is not right, then the demonic personalities win, and sometimes time favors demigods, then the saintly persons, devotees get to win. So when sattva, so when the mode of goodness is prominent in that particular time, now we are talking about the collective, okay, or the collective mode. Collectively, when the mode of goodness is operating, the devotees and sages win. When the mode of passion is prominent at that particular time, then these demoniac personalities, they flourish. And the mode of ignorance, tamas, then these yakshas and rakshasas, they prevail. So in this way, so now according to that, we have to assume the time is pretty bad, time must be not right. A person like this Trump becomes the president, most powerful personality. So in this way, Bhagavan undergoes victory and defeat for the sake of the diversity of his pastimes, nourish the joy of his devotees. So, point is that everything happens according to the will of the Lord actually. And Lord always allow, you know, its devotees, they prevail actually, you know. And demoniac persons, ultimately they have to pay for that demoniac acts. So this is describing narration of the journey of the ocean of milk, you know. This is an example, Jiva Goswami cites that. Lord Vishnu entered the Asuras, this demoniac feature, and intensifying their strength and prowess. So their power, demonic people's power, there also comes from the Supreme Lord. And demigods in his divine aspect, enlivening them. And the snake Vasuki in the form of Manka. So in the journey of the ocean actually, remember, it was a Vasuki snake was used as a journey the mountain, Mandara mountain, you know, in journey of the ocean of milk ocean. So that time, demigods were, time was not favoring them at that time. So Lord actually advised them. So now you seek cooperation with the demons, you know, because it's now time favoring to them, you know, not you. So now for you to survive, you must make a peace with the demons. And that's how they proposed this journey in the ocean. They will get some goodies from that journey of the ocean. That's how demons got attracted. And they agreed for that cooperation actually. So here the doubt is raised. If the Lord is subject to the influence of time, in which a particular mode is prominent, is the independent nature of his pastime not just lost thereby? So again, there's a possible doubt here. That is this Lord himself, is the under the control of the time? Which obviously it's not. And does not this excessively close relation with the mode clearly reveal that he is partial? So let's see how Jehoshaphat responds to that. So here this Paramatma creates, so he's citing another verse here. When the Supreme Self desires to create the bodies for himself, out of the equilibrated state of the three modes, he separately brings forth rajas by his maya potency. So when Ishvara, when the Supreme Lord, wishes to sport these manifold forms, he manifests sattva. When the verge, and when on the verge of going to sleep, yoga nidra, he impels tamas. So that's what it happens actually. Is operating because of that way. So he evolves the cosmos specifically to revive the opportunity of serving him for those jivas who were practicing devotees in the last cycle of creation and were merged with his body prior to the new cycle of creation. I doubt, since the super soul resides in everyone's heart, so what is so special about devotees among the jivas? And why is it stressed that the creation is evolved specifically for the sake of his devotees? So that's the point here now. So Jiva Goswami is responding, even though super soul is situated in everyone's heart, he is attached to the devotees. People may live in a city with millions of people, but their affection is only for the family and friends. So it's just an example here, you know, that we may be living in a city where millions of other people also may be living there, but our affection is not for everyone. Our affection is for those with our close family and friends. Same with the Lord, actually. Everything in this material universe, all kind of people are there. But his attention is focused on his devotees always, actually, Supreme Lord's attention. So that is how why devotees are being favored, because they are the ones who are following the Lord's rules and regulations, injunctions, scriptural injunctions, so on like that, you know. It's just like a teacher, you know, for a teacher, every student is equal to him. It's a fact, you know. Equally predisposed to all the students, but when a particular student is doing more than what the teacher desires, obviously that teacher will have a soft corner for that, love for that particular student. There's a Dronacharya, you know. For him, both Pandavas and Kauravas are all equal. Yet Arjuna was very favorite to him because Arjuna was paying extra effort in learning what Dronacharya was teaching them, you know. And that really attracted Dronacharya. That's exactly what happens now. So Bhagavan protects his devotees and kills the demon. That is further established by this Jaya Vijaya story, actually. And of course, everyone now is quite familiar with the Jaya Vijaya, who were the doorkeepers, personal associates of Lord Vishnu in the Vaikuntha. So once, what happens, the four Kumaras came, and you know the details, you know, how they cursed Jaya and Vijaya, but they prevented him, them, these Kumaras, the entry into the Vaikuntha, you know. So four Kumaras, they cursed him, that this is a demoniac nature, so now you go and go to the material world and appear, take birth as demons for three lifetimes. Lord comes back, it all happened because of the Lord's own arrangement, you know. So Jaya and Vijaya came as demons in first lifetime as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyaku. Second lifetime they appear as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and third Shupal and Dantavakra, you know. So here this text 103-104, that's what this story is cited to support that contention here, you know. So Jaya and Vijaya, they are actual devotees of the Lord. So even though when they appear as demons and they become very, very powerful demons, it is because of Lord's investment of his potency, Lord's potency there, because they were his devotees actually. So Lord acts only for the sake of his devotees. Whereas the functions of the creation, sustenance and dissolution of the cosmos are carried out solely to facilitate that purpose. So everything is geared, this cosmic manifestation, everything is geared ultimately for the benefit of his devotees. Lord does not personally deal with his maya. Time is the medium through which he executes his functions. It's his expansions. That's what is concerned with the day-to-day administration of the universe. And especially in regard to maya, it's the time. It's the effort. Or it's just a volitional act. So Sukadeva Goswami exemplifies this particular principle of the Lord's mercy on Prahlada, Jayan Vish. King, the celestial sage Narada affectionately narrated a history on the very matter to King Yudhishthira, respond to his question for the time of great sacrifice. So this is all in the seventh canto, is all about that story actually. When Parikshit Maharaj is actually, Yudhishthira Maharaj is asking Narad Muni that how come these demons are able to control all things. That's where the story was. So, again in nutshell, upon being cursed by the four Kumaras, and all because of the Lord's own arrangement. So this Lord's own personal associates, now just imagine, his own personal associates also had to go through all these things. Jaya and Vijaya became the formidable demons, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and of course Hiranyakashipu's son was Prahlad, who was a great, great devotee of Lord Vishnu. And his own father, Karna, Hiranyakashipu, he became greatly envious. He was very, very envious of Lord Vishnu. When he saw his own was a devotee of Lord Vishnu, so obviously he could not control his anger, you know. And he tried all possible means to kill his own son, you know. And every time, of course, Prahlad Maharaj was saved by the Lord. You know. Ultimately, of course, Lord came as Nrisimhadev and kills Hiranyakashipu and saves Prahlad, you know. So that story is being cited here to establish that particular point, you know. So both of these demons were able to oppose and fight Bhagavan solely because they had been empowered by him, by the Lord. Otherwise, they could not. So Lord killed both of them to protect his devotees. So see, ultimately their point, repeatedly we keep hearing that everything what Lord does is for the benefit of his devotees. Sometimes his mercy comes disguised. So when devotees lose sometimes, it is also by the ultimate arrangement of the Supreme Lord for their own benefit. So Lord killed both of them to protect his devotees, Mother Earth and Prahlad. Both of the demons were ultimately re-established in their eternal service as doorkeepers in Vaikuntha. Externally, it seemed like the Lord was biased against the demons, but in reality, he was playing exclusively with his own potency. So it was all by Lord's arrangements. So this is what Krishna operates now. He accomplished so many objectives in one act. So he was playing exclusively with his own potency, which he had invested in them for their pleasure and for the pleasure of his devotees. So that whole that episode I described to prove that particular point. We are running short of time, you know, so that's why I'm not going to discuss this quiz question that I gave you because we stopped now. I'm just going to stop giving quizzes. So that's why I'm not going to answer those. The answers are already there in my this PowerPoint, and as well as we discuss already those questions. So with that, I'll stop here and see if there are any questions. All right. is asked, was Makarand Prabhu. Mother Aditi's prayers resulted in restoring the kingdom of Indra. Correct. Thank you, Makarand Prabhu. Father, we hear that how Mother Aditi was praying to the Supreme Lord to restore her sons the kingdom of heavenly planets. Because Indra and all other had to flee when Bali Maharaj won, you know. And of course, then Lord even asked Mother Aditi to perform his Bhayavrata. So then ultimately, Lord descends, tells that I descend myself, and of course, restore the demigod's kingdom. That's why Lord came as dwarf incarnation, you know, Vamandev, and cheats Bali Maharaj to donate him all the three worlds back again. Thank you, Makarandu. So, Dalita Mataji is having a question too. Explain the text 93.3. I could not relate to the question and response. Could you please elaborate? Devotees are always self-satisfied. The response is devotees, transcendental bodies are endowed with Vishuddha Sattva. Thank you. Yeah, the point Jiva Goswami was making here that the possible critics might be asking that that just as the Lord is Atmarama, self-satisfied. So he doesn't need anything from his devotees, you know, and yet he is so favorably inclined to them. The same way devotees themselves are also self-satisfied, and yet they are so much devotionally oriented toward the Lord. So the point the critics might make that both must be under the influence of the modes of material nature, including the Supreme Lord, as Mayavadis always say that. That even Krishna comes into the modes when he descends the material world, the material mode of goodness. You know? So Jiva Goswami is refusing that not only the Lord is also in the pure mode of goodness, these devotees are also in the pure mode of goodness. And when we are in Vishuddha Sattva mode, this thing doesn't happen then. So this thing happens because of bhakti, the mutual devotion between the Lord and the devotees. You know. Devotees are devotionally oriented towards the Lord, genuine bhakti, and Lord is also, as we saw that example, the Lord is also completely let himself be controlled by the devotees, and that is the bhakti. And bhakti is actually the manifestation of the Lord's internal potency, Swarupa Shakti. And of that is Ladini potency specifically. That is what. So that Vishuddha Sattva is because of that the bhakti, and bhakti is coming from Lord's internal potency. So in that regard, that was given. What is the role of Vishuddha Sattva versus the material mode of goodness? So it was not material mode of goodness, but it's pure mode of goodness. Sharad Prabhu, slide number 7. I want to add a comment. Great. Gajendra in his previous life was King Indradyumna, who had installed Lord Jagannatha, Baladeva and Subhadra in Puri, Jagannath Puri. And ceremony was presided over by Lord Brahma due to curse of Agastya Muni. Thank you very much, Sharad Prabhu. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. Okay, Sanjeev Prabhu is saying, we always heard piety or good always wins over bad, but actually it's Lord's potency always wins, bhakti always wins. Correct. So sometimes, you know, when the time is not right, as we just saw in that example Jiva Goswami is explaining, when the mode of goodness prevalent, then devotees of course win, you know. But sometimes when the lower modes are prominent collectively in the universe, then at that time a to their great anxiety, great suffering, but ultimately they are going to be protected by the Lord. You know, the Lord's protection is always there, and this is why he promises, you know, that to Arjuna to declare that my devotees never perishes. You know, namai bhakti pranashati. Ultimately, devotees will always win. Now, we are not talking about material wins, but they are always going to be, you know, going back to spiritual world. Sanjeev, I learned a new aspect of today's class. Thank you, Prabhuji. And so did I also. I learned about this compassion, you know, about it, how compassion works, the psychology of compassion for us versus Supreme Lord. For us, compassion works only when, unless we suffer ourselves, we cannot feel the pain of others. No? And it's the compassion that is what, you know, ultimately it is actually the transformation of the heart, you know, and it is that kind of compassion that is the cause for the empathy that develops for others. But in the Lord's case, this cannot happen that way, you know, because Lord's compassion is not because of the material suffering of the devotees, but it is because of the devotees' bhakti, an intense pain, suffering. Devotees pray much more intensely. They would chant the holy name much more intensely while they are suffering. That is the reason why Kunti Mata was offering the Lord that please give me more suffering, so more I get to you know, surrender to you, because we are not that kind of devotees, not advanced enough. Nonetheless, Kunti Mata is providing good example that only when we are suffering, our bhakti becomes much more stronger, much more intense, and as a result, we get to attract Lord's mercy towards us. You know, so it is a bhakti itself that really triggers compassion within the Lord. Not the material misery itself attracts the Lord. You know, my sister, I don't know if she's there yet or not. Many times she asks me these questions. You know, but material suffering, why Lord particularly allows his devotees to suffer, you know. So this was a good thing to understand that. So we have to take a positive view of our material suffering in the world. And I'm telling you, sometimes it is, even though I'm teaching all this, but sometimes it's very, very difficult to actually practice. You know? Sufferings are so intense sometimes, you know, sometimes wonder, I'm doing so much by Lord, and still why am I suffering? And that was the question actually that Vidur Mahatma was asking. That how is it possible that super soul residing side by side with the soul, individual soul, and yet Maya is able to control the soul? You know? How is the super soul allows that to happen? That was the whole thing that we just heard about, all this thing that some this happens, you know, and by Lord's own arrangement this happens. And ultimately it is for the benefit of that devotee. So we are ordinary devotees actually. So sometimes suffering allows us to really discharge our karmas, you know, resolve our karmas, bad karmas. So instead of cutting, losing the whole arm, we get a little scratch on our little finger, you know. That's what. So when the Lord helps his devotees, he helps while still making sure that laws of material nature are never altered, while keeping the material nature. Those of material nature intact, he manages to help his devotees. So this suffering, that ultimately all our karmas get resolved right in this very lifetime, if we are really steadfast in our bhakti. That's the point actually. That's what the point I got while I've been preparing for these classes, you know. And this is what the way I learned about this. Makarandu, whatever you typed here, it's like garbled here, you know.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm using this Devanagari text. It is about Anukampa, Anugraha, and Bhutadaya. That was the text. And,
thank you,
Prabhu. The yeah.
Thank you. Anyway, we are almost toward the So I'm going to request Dishana to conclude the class with Nashima prayer. If Dishana is around, Hari Bol, Dishana.
Hare Krishna. Namaste Narasimhaya. Namaste Narasimhaya.
Okay, I'll see you next week then. Hari Bol.